sooner or later, you can bet your life that every Jew in this building is going to say the same thing. He's a little too Jewish for my taste.
Shalom, and welcome to the Two Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning is writer Sarah Aronson, author of the youth book about bar mitzvah and sports, Beyond Lucky. We'll also have visits from our two Jewish expert on the international scene, Tom Price, and our maven on Israel, Guy Gelbert. Please email your comments to us at twojewishradio@yahoo.com or visit us on the web at twojewishradio.com. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Two Jewish.
Shalom. This past week, we began the Jewish calendar month of Elul, last month of the year, during which we began to prepare ourselves for the coming Jewish days of awe, the High Holy Days. We do so by examining our conduct in the past year, deciding how we might best improve in the year to come. To remind us that tshuva, repentance, and return are more than a two-day-a-year process, we sound the shofar each day of the Jewish month of Elul, awakening us to the need to reform and return to the best we can be, and to apologize to those we have wronged or injured. Blowing the shofar is actually a great way to wake anyone and everyone up, by the way. A shofar, for those of you who still don't know, is a ram's horn, but it can also be a horn from any other appropriate kosher animal except the cow that has a large enough horn to actually blow. The horn is hollowed out, sometimes curved or ornamented with carving, cleaned, and a proper aperture assured at one end of the horn. You can actually make a real horn shofar of your own. Our school children do so in our temple religious school, and with a bit of practice, a lot of practice, you too can become a Baal Tokea and blow the shofar. At my temple, we blow it before Friday night services prior to Shabbat, and at Hebrew and religious school services, and at classes, and at meetings, and pretty much any and every excuse we can come up with to blow the shofar. It's a dramatic and beautiful way to experience the urgency of the coming High Holy Days, and it's fun, an ancient, haunting sound, nonetheless an oddly beautiful and somewhat dramatic sound too, because a shofar is not a machined instrument. You're not always sure just what will come out. I brought my shofar along this morning, one of the 20 or so shofarot that I own, and I thought I'd get us started with a little Jewish reveille, a kind of blow-in to the Two Jewish Show this morning. Here goes. Well, if you weren't awake yet, you sure should be by now. That's a little shaky. I'll get better over this month. Anyway, to play us in this morning a little more elegantly on the same theme of the shofar, we'll begin our pre-Rosh Hashanah musical preview with the setting of the classic Rosh Hashanah text, Uva Shofar Gadol. The great shofar is sounded, and the still, small voice of conscience is heard, sung by the classic Beth Abraham Youth Chorale.
Thank you.
Uva Shofar Gadol for the coming High Holy Days and the season of the Shofar. It's also Labor Day weekend, and during a busy time of year, this marks the only real pause in a fall full of activity here in southern Arizona, where I live. Since we rabbis and cantors are working overtime right now, preparing for the coming High Holy Days, it's wonderful to have a celebration of labor today, because we know labor. You know, this is our ninth Labor Day edition of Too Jewish, which speaks to our long and tireless efforts to bring you only the finest Jewish programming imaginable. Our hard and caring labor, if you will. So while you're preparing for your barbecues, concerts and such, and getting ready to enjoy the last real work day off before Thanksgiving, here's a bit about a holiday that has a very interesting history and a great deal of meaning for Jews. Long before it became an excuse for a three-day weekend, Labor Day was a significant statement about the value of a human being's hard work. When it started, the very concept that labor had value, morally and economically, was controversial, as it remains in some quarters today. Labor Day was created in the 1880s to celebrate and support the working man and woman. It was a way of saying that labor mattered. Capital wasn't the only positive value in the economy and society. There are folks who still question this assertion, some of them hosting radio talk shows. But you know what? They're wrong. We Jews have always believed labor has moral quality. One of the great sentences in Pirkei Avot, the Mishnah tractate completed in the year 200 or so, the ethics of our ancestors, says, Al shlosha devarim ha'olam omed al ha'torah ve'al ha'avodah ve'al gemilut chasadim. The world is based on three things, on Torah, on work, and on acts of selfless kindness. The Hebrew word avodah, labor, primarily means practical, prosaic work as we know it, although it also implies divine service. The connection of labor to service to God is intentional for Jews. Honest work is an important form of prayer. This exaltation of basic labor as a foundation of society and even a way to serve God is consistent throughout Jewish tradition. You might not know that until quite recently, being a rabbi wasn't a paying profession. Most of the great rabbis and scholars in Jewish history had day jobs to make a living, from Rabbi Yochanan HaSandlar, a sandal or shoemaker in the days of the Talmud, to Maimonides, the 12th century physician in Spain, to the rabbis of Eastern Europe who made a living in the lumber trade or by working as butchers. For Jews, not only has there never been any shame in hard work, it's been a kind of exaltation. So it should come as no surprise that many of the great organizers of labor throughout history have been Jews, that a movement based in exalting work, the labor Zionists, settled and then created the State of Israel, formed much of its culture, and had the first dominant political party, Avodah, the Labor Party. Here in America, we should mention that important names in labor, from Samuel Gompers to Emma Goldman, were of course Jewish. You know, Gompers, the founder and longtime president of the American Federation of Labor, was a guiding force in the development of the American labor movement and Labor Day itself. He once said, Labor Day differs in every essential way from the other holidays of the year in any country. All other holidays are in a more or less degree connected with conflicts, battles of man's prowess over man, strife and discord for greed and power, glories achieved by one nation over another. Labor Day is devoted to no man, living or dead, to no sect, race, or nation. It celebrates all work, our avodah, if you will, our service, in a meaningful way. So, enjoy this day off of labor and tomorrow too, and remember that it is the workers who built our country and who maintain our society, and that those who do the hard work deserve respect and honor, and deserve to be treated as equals. Our guest this morning on Too Jewish, Sarah Aronson, worked hard and has written a charming book about what it means to become bar mitzvah and to try to be a normal sports-loving boy at the same time. Find out how her novel's protagonist accomplishes that when we come back in a few moments on Too Jewish.
Safety. It's a word we take for granted at home and at the workplace, but sometimes safety isn't a sure thing. Environmental Strategies, Inc. is an environmental remediation company that's been promoting safe living in Arizona since 1989. Environmental Strategies specializes in asbestos and lead abatement, mold remediation, and industrial cleaning. In addition, they have a building and remodeling division that makes it convenient for clients to get all their services from one contractor. Environmental Strategies jobs range from seam tape removal in a single-family home to insulation removal in a Challenger Learjet aircraft and everything in between. So if you're in need of asbestos or lead removal, mold remediation, industrial cleaning, or top-notch general contracting services, call Environmental Strategies today at 884-1114. Estimates and bids are free and confidential. Ken Goodman is the president, and he'd love to talk with you about your project. Environmental Strategies, serving all of Arizona since 1989. Call 884-1114.
Hi, Joe Spina, Mama's Pizza. You know, the great Italian philosopher Antonio Garaducci once said, "To find balance in life is to find happiness." Now, I assume he was a smart guy being a philosopher and all, so it gets me to thinking, balance is probably a good thing when it comes to pizza, too. You know, just the right amount of sauce, cheese, crust, and toppings. But consider this. What one mama's customer might think is just the right amount of something, another customer might think is too much or too little. That's why at Mama's we balance every item we make to each individual customer's taste. Extra cheese or light cheese? Heavy on the sauce or easy on the sauce? Crispy crust or lightly done crust? It's all in balance for each customer. And as Garaducci says, balance equals happiness, and that equals loyal Mama's customers. So I'd say that, on balance, that's a pretty good situation. Mama's Pizza with four convenient locations. Now repeat after me. Mama's Pizza!
Tucson Hebrew Academy is an independent school for children from kindergarten through eighth grade. Has a long-standing track record of academic excellence and an unparalleled integrated general and Jewish studies curriculum. With a variety of music and fine arts classes combined with the award-winning sports programs, THA nourishes students in body, mind, and spirit. The atmosphere in the classroom encourages self-assured self-expression, critical thinking, and respect for diverse points of view. THA's low student-teacher ratio gives its highly qualified faculty the ability to provide instruction based on the most up-to-date proven research methods in science, technology, math, and literature. THA students understand the relevance of Jewish values in a modern world. THA sees learning as a way of life and builds a strong sense of community. THA Tucson Hebrew Academy is enrolling now. Give your child the gift of a THA education. For more information on how to enroll or to schedule a tour, call 529-3888. That's 529-3888 or visit thaaz.org. We're delighted to welcome to Two Jewish our guest this morning, author Sarah Aronson. She has an MFA in writing for children and young adults from Vermont College of Fine Arts. Her second book for young readers is called Beyond Lucky. Her first young adult novel, Head Case, was named the ALA Quick Pitch for Reluctant Readers. She's not writing or teaching. Writing, she likes watching sports, riding her bike, cooking spicy food, and drinking good coffee. I'd like to welcome to Two Jewish Sarah Aronson. Good morning.
Good morning.
Sarah, tell us what the difference is between writing for youngish readers. This is sort of a, I don't know, what do we call it? A tweeners now, like 9 to 12 year old book, and writing for older kids or writing for adults.
Well, I think that when you're writing for young adults, there's an edge, a little more cynicism, and the growing up has already commenced. When you're writing for middle grade novels, that liminal moment, those wonderful periods of change physically and emotionally are happening right in front of your eyes. And that is reflected in the kind of story that you write for those readers.
The book that you wrote, Beyond Lucky, which is just out now, in fact, I have an advance uncorrected proof. It's very exciting for us at Two Jewish when we get these. Is about a kid who idolizes a soccer star and wants to be a soccer star himself and is getting ready for bar mitzvah all at the same time. You know, I think I taught that kid last week. Who's it modeled on?
A whole lot of people. I think that as a writer, we are people who keep our eyes open all the time. And Ari is definitely a combination of a lot of people in my life, including me as a kid. I was a very superstitious, ritualistic child. He's also a lot like my son, Elliot, who loves the presidents and who really sort of inspired the voice of Ari. And he's also a lot like my daughter, who likes sports and likes being active and wants to be part of a group.
Who's your favorite kids' book author?
Oh, you're going to get me in trouble. I have lots of favorites, and it depends on what mood I'm in.
Besides yourself, of course.
Of course.
Well, how about the mood you're in right now?
I love reading Gary Schmidt. He just published a book, Okay for Now, and his book, The Wednesday Wars, was an award winner. I love the voice of that character. He's funny and sincere. Gary doesn't mind being a little bit didactic at times, and I appreciate that, also liking to be a little didactic at times, or at least having my editor cut that part out. I also love my former advisor, Kathy Appelt, who wrote The Underneath, and Tim Wynn Jones, who writes slightly older books. His new book is called Blinking Caution.
When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll talk much more with Sarah Aronson about her book Beyond Lucky, about writing for kids and the unique qualities that they bring to their reading experience. When we come back on Too Jewish.
At Handmaker's Senior Day programs, variety and interesting activities help Barbara Sanders really enjoy her time there.
They have a lot of activities that I like to do. They have ceramics, they have painting, they have sewing. We go out to the museums and to the parks, and we also go to the casino.
Handmaker helps seniors and disabled individuals maintain their independence longer than they might otherwise. Handmaker's flexible scheduling makes the Senior Day program very convenient, and Barbara feels right at home.
The staff is very nice. They take good care of you. They'll make sure that you have everything you need.
And there are other benefits, too.
All of my grandchildren have piggy banks that I've made from here, and I have a lot of ceramics in my house now because of here.
Call Handmaker at 322-7035 for more information and a complimentary one-day pass. There are new people and new friends to meet.
They're not just friendships. You know, you actually are a part of a family.
Handmaker Senior Day Program serves all faiths, centrally located on Rosemont, just south of TMC. Call 322-7035. Taste of Judaism has everything you ever wanted to know about Judaism, but were afraid to ask. In three upbeat, fun, free, informative sessions, Taste of Judaism brings the joy of Jewish life and learning to you. You'll study with outstanding rabbis, including Too Jewish's Rabbi Sam Kohan. Learn what Jewish values, spirituality, and community are all about, and have a great sample of delicious Jewish foods. Classes are offered at various times at three Tucson locations, at Temple Emmanuel in central Tucson, on the northwest side, and on the east side. All classes are open to everyone, Jewish or not. Best of all, Taste of Judaism is free. There's no charge, but you must pre-register by calling 327-4501. More than 3,500 students have taken Taste of Judaism. Why not join them? Call 327-4501 and ask for Mila to register for Taste of Judaism, the most popular and effective introduction to Jewish learning and life. Call 327-4501 for your own Taste of Judaism.
If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or kvel, please email us at twojewishradio@yahoo.com or visit our website at twojewishradio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through the website or download us from there at the Apple iTunes Store as free podcasts. Free. Such a deal. Judaism has always respected and honored labor and laborers. Sadly, we live in an era in which labor has been in nearly full retreat as a voice in our society for decades. But a story a couple of weeks ago triggered a kind of moral outrage for me that reminds me of my grandparents' socialist beliefs and my mom's union leadership, and it makes me feel that something has gone badly wrong in America in a very different way than so many of the hotheads out there are yelling about.
Kein Amerike zu kommen, hab ich kein Mädchen Sport, hab gedenkt darauf zu werden, in Parlosen sich abholt. Hab gehabt wie schöne Päher, wie jeder Primärin. Zum Sofern statt an Bord, hab ich den Päher solches nicht. Wenn ihr mich fragen, Deutsch, wie kann das sein? Der Terrence, der Fien ist liebe Freunde mein. What? Can you make it in America? So you land of fitness, you can say. What can you make it in America? I feel it, there is a lot of people with a guy. As from Payers, so say man, but can I meet you for? So trogen sich die Payers, alle made like gold. What can you make this America? We American, what can you make?
In early August in Hershey, Pennsylvania, hundreds of foreign students on a State Department cultural exchange visa program walked off of factory jobs. Why? Well, here's the rest of the story. The J-1 visa program brings foreign students to America to work for 2 months and learn English. It was designed in part to help fill seasonal tourism jobs at resorts and seasides. The 400 students employed in this case at a Pennsylvania factory that makes Hershey's candy said that even though they make $8.35 an hour, which isn't utterly terrible, their rent and program fees were deducted from their paychecks. That left them with less money than they spent to get the visas and travel to America in the first place. Some of the students were assigned night shifts, and they said they were pressured to work faster and faster on the factory lines. Well, now that the story has broken and the students walked out, suddenly nobody actually hired these folks, especially not Hershey's. In fact, a spokesman for Hershey's, Kirk Seville, said the chocolate company did not directly operate the packing plant, which is managed by another company called Excel. A spokeswoman for Excel said it found the student workers through another staffing company, and so on. In another story that broke last December, it was revealed that federal immigration officials were investigating two human trafficking abuse cases related to these J-1 visas. Strip clubs openly solicited J-1 visa holders in job listings, and some foreign students said they were forced into sexual slavery when their passports were confiscated by a ring of criminals. About 150,000 J-1 visas were given out in 2008, the last year we have statistics for. Businesses save about 8% by using a foreign worker because of the Social Security and other taxes they don't have to pay. Not to mention, the businesses have the ability to run a company store and housing that basically confiscates the workers' salaries in exchange for room and board. And all of this takes place in America, land of the free and the home of the brave, the place where Abraham Lincoln once said, labor is prior to and independent of capital. Capital is only the fruit of labor and could never have existed if labor had not first existed. Labor is the superior of capital and deserves much the higher consideration. That was Abraham Lincoln, the first Republican president. I believe it's time to abolish this awful J-1 visa program that clearly leads to exploitation. Yeesh, maybe on this Labor Day, it's finally time to return to our real roots and respect the work that makes our society possible. In happier news, in our ongoing effort to play more Yiddish music for our loyal 97-year-old listener, Naomi Islin, here's a favorite Yiddish song I have always loved. Der Milner's Tren, about the long, hard work of a miller, as sung by the great Yiddish folk singer Sidor Bilarski. It's about the transitive time of hard work, of lost love.
Oy, wie viele Jahren sind in verfahren, sind hier bei Milner Otado. Die Räder drehen sich, die Jahren gehen sich. Ich bin schön alt und greis und grob. Die Räder drehen sich, die Jahren gehen sich. Ich bin schön alt und greis und grob. Es steig verrannen, ich will mir dermannen, zieh hab gehad a Stück Glück. Die Räder drehen sich, die Jorne gehen sich, kein End verries mich tot zurück. Die Räder drehen sich, die Jorden gehen sich, kein End verries mich tot zurück. Ich hab gerzogen, will mich verjogen, a Reus von Dorf,
ohne Fund der Mühle, die Räder drehen sich, die Jorn gehen sich, und ein Eck und Monat ziel, die Räder drehen.
That's for our special listener, Naomi Islin, the classic Yiddish song Der Milner's Tren, the Song of the Miller, which, by the way, was used in the movie A Serious Man a couple of years ago. We welcome our maven on Israel, Guy Gelbart, head of the Israel Center. Boker Tov, Guy, good morning.
Boker Tov.
There was an awful terror attack, had likes of which we haven't seen for a little while anyway, near Eilat, which hasn't seen much terrorism altogether, not too long ago. We've talked about it, kind of reported on the show, but how are Israelis feeling about that?
Well, in many ways, this terrorist attack was different than anything we saw before because of, I think, two or maybe even three major elements. One of the first element, of course, is where the terrorist attack took place. It was in the southern border near Eilat, an area that for over 30 years was very, very quiet, thanks to the peace treaty with Egypt.
The cold peace with Egypt, but still it was quiet.
The cold peace with Egypt, but yeah, as you said, it's quiet, it's peaceful. And it seems that maybe as a result of the Arab Spring in Egypt and the change in powers, some things are changing there. Mainly there are a lot of reports of Al-Qaeda agents that have been starting to take control over areas of Sinai connected to four major Bedouin families that are controlling different parts of Sinai. And it seems that that has an impact on that created this terrorist attack as well. Because traditionally, those four Bedouin families, their economical basis is by helping smugglers to smuggle anything, okay?
Could be drugs, it could be arms, it could be anything.
Anything. So what could be better if someone is willing to pay you to smuggle terrorists from the Gaza Strip through the Sinai and do attacks near Eilat? I'm a little cynical, but that's probably the story behind that. The other element was the way this terrorist attack took place, because it wasn't the traditional way of one terrorist coming, doing a suicide bomb or one shooting. It was a very organized military-wise operation with many people involved, with more than one shooting, with an anti-tank missile that was shot at an Israeli helicopter, with a suicide bomber, with a landmine. It was very complex. That kind of complex attacks, we used to see that such attacks in Lebanon when we were facing Hezbollah. That is also something the American army is facing when they fight Al-Qaeda. So there seem to be fingerprints of a more professional and more serious organization into this attack.
That's not good news, of course. And we can only hope that Egypt will get back control of the Sinai, or control it to a greater degree. But unfortunately, it may be a sign of things to come. Thanks, Guy. We'll talk next week.
Thank you very much.
When we come back, we'll hear from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price, and get the old Jewish joke of the week. We visit weekly with the great restaurateur Janos Wilder of Janos Restaurant at the J-Bar. Good morning, Janos.
Good morning, Rabbi.
Now, this is a really obvious question to ask, but what's cooking at Janos?
Greatness, wonderful food, wonderful flavors, great experiences, beautiful atmosphere, terrific views. That's about it.
You know, I have to say, it is really one of the most magnificent restaurant experiences you can have, not just in the Southwest, but in the world.
Well, thanks, Rabbi. You know, we have three restaurants now, but Janos is the flagship. That's where we put everything into it. All the elegance, all of the love, all of the caring. That's the peak of what we do.
So for a very special night, or just because you want to have a spectacular meal, how can they get in touch with you?
Just give us a call, 615-6100. Go to our website, www.janos.com. We'll be happy to see you.
That's janos.com. Thanks, Janos.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reformed, Conservative, and Orthodox is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
Together We Remember, September 11, 2011, marks the 10th anniversary of the events that changed our country and our world in the most profound ways. In Tucson, we'll commemorate this day as both a memorial remembrance and an inspiration to help build our community, our country, and our world for good, for life, and for peace. Out of our diversity of backgrounds, creeds, and races, we embrace a deep unity that employs our collective gifts to remember 9/11, to be inspired, to strive for a better future for us all. Here on Two Jewish, we highlight the events commemorating this 10th anniversary of 9/11 every week, building up to the 10th anniversary itself, September 11, 2011. There's a website dedicated for this purpose, Tucson911.org or Tucson911.com. For more information on all 9/11 Tucson events, go to that website, Tucson911.org. Together We Remember. Tonight at the Fox Theater, there'll be a screening of the film Divided We Fall, documenting stories from Sikh, Muslim, and Arab American communities examining issues of race, religion, and security post 9/11, discovering surprising connections. A dialogue panel will follow the film presented by the Culture of Peace Alliance. And this week, the University of Arizona has a week-long examination of issues related to 9/11. 9/11, How We've Changed Week, sponsored by the SBS. Events run through Thursday and include discussions on security, politics, war, and the media. Go to Tucson911.org for more information. Next Sunday is the 10th anniversary of 9/11. That means a whole roster of great events that you ought to attend. At 8 a.m., Mayor Bob Walkup of Tucson will be present at the commemorative laying of the wreath at Fire Station 1, 265 South Church, followed by a fire truck procession to Randolph Park. At 9:30 a.m. at the Reed Park Bandshell, Mayor Walkup and Dr. Richard Carmona will speak at the 9/11 memorial held by the Tucson Firefighters Association, the Tucson Police Officers Association. At 3 p.m. at Centennial Hall at the U of A, the Tucson Chamber Artists, in cooperation with the Tucson Symphony, will present a community event commemorating the 9/11 anniversary, including a new oratorio commissioned by composer Stephen Paulus and Mozart's Requiem. And at 7 p.m. at St. Augustine's Cathedral, a multi-faith memorial service will commemorate the 10th anniversary with prayer, song, and reflection from 15 different faith traditions on the theme, Together We Remember. The keynote speaker will be Bishop Gerald Kikanis. For more information on all 9/11 events in Southern Arizona, go to the website, Tucson911.org. Together We Remember. We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
We started talking about Turkey, one of both of our favorite countries. There have been some changes in the politics. You mentioned how Erdogan is really a moderate leader, although he's perceived as an Islamist in the West, or a radical Islamist, which he's not. Military has always played a moderating moderating is a strange thing to use when you're talking about the military, but a moderating influence in Turkish politics, really by Ataturk's design. Tell us what's going on there now.
Right. Historically, the Turkish military establishment, and particularly its senior officers, its leadership, have seen themselves as the guardian of the Turkish constitution and the vision of Ataturk, the Ataturk's concept of a multi-ethnic secular state. But also a state governed by certain moral principles. So historically, over the past century, when Turkish governments, duly elected as they may have been, got too far out of line, too far out of sync with the Kemalist vision, or were too corrupt, or started going to one extreme or another in terms of their relationship with Islam, the military would step in and stage a coup. They would oust the government. They would take over the country. And most people respected the military because they recognized the need for these interventions, and the military gave up power usually fairly quickly after they stabilized the country and set up new elections. So most people in Turkey have appreciated that role of the military. However, Erdogan recently arrested a lot of senior military officials, put them on trial, and the rest resigned in mass protest. And then he, let's say, changed the interpretation of a key article of the Constitution. He didn't change the Constitution to limit the role of the military and make it less likely that the military would intervene in the future by staging a coup. So I think many outsiders applauded that as a great thing. He took the fangs out of the military, not realizing that the military has been a moderating influence in Turkish politics, has been the safeguard of both democracy, moderation, and secularism. Basically, the whole ball of wax that Kemal Atatürk envisioned. So this change is probably not a change for the better, although to outsiders it looks like it is one.
You know, it's interesting. I've been in Turkey a number of times, not as often as you, but we were there earlier this summer. And I have to say, you know, you used to see more military presence everywhere, and they love flying the Turkish flag everywhere. You know, they're very proud of being Turks. But I never felt uncomfortable because there is that sort of sense the military is keeping the society the way Atatürk envisioned it. It'll be interesting to see which way it goes and if Turkey has sort of grown enough not to need that large a military presence to keep it, if you will, secular and Western. Thanks, Tom. We'll talk next week.
I look forward to it.
It's time for our old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor, your Bubby and Zadie New, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. And this one is indeed a classic. A rabbi, priest, and minister have their houses of worship side by side by side. Each congregation gets their clergyman a new car. A Buick for the minister, a Cadillac for the priest, and a Lincoln for the rabbi. But gas prices being what they are, they decide to share the wealth, carpool for their hospital rounds. On the first day, the other two are shocked to see the pastor lay his hands on the hood of the Buick and pray silently. "What are you doing?" the priest asks. The pastor looks up. "I'm dedicating this car to the Lord's service." "Good idea. I'll be right back," the priest exclaims. Running into his church, he emerges with a scepter and a short stick, shakes water out of it onto the Cadillac. The rabbi stares. "What are you doing?" he says. "I'm consecrating the car with holy water," says the priest. "Great idea," the rabbi says. Runs into his synagogue's tool shed, comes out with a hacksaw, and cuts 2 inches off the tailpipe of the Lincoln. That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature of Too Jewish, just for you. You should live and be well. And as Walker Ford, our producer, says, you can never go wrong with a circumcision joke. Now, can you? So what are the most important laws? Our weekly portion of Ki Tetzeh in the Torah in Deuteronomy obligates us to ask this question, for it is filled with an array of laws and ordinances affecting every aspect of life. They range from rules limiting unorthodox ritual practices to rules limiting conduct in wartime, from personal morality to behavior in society. Family laws are established, tort laws on damages are instituted, laws of kindness decree human decency, lots and lots of laws, some obscure, some famous. In short, reading Ki Tetzeh is like reading a law book, interesting but kind of dry. Some of the legislation is outdated or irrelevant, but two sets of related laws established in Ki Tetzeh alone would guarantee its place in the highest of moral realms. Both put into practical terms what the Torah has already stressed. When a person is in your power economically, you must not exploit his weakness. The first of these says that if you take as pledge an item of clothing from a poor person, you must return it to him before nightfall. In other words, you must not allow an impoverished man or woman to spend the night without proper clothing or shelter. This is a necessary reminder for our society, which tolerates homelessness in a manner that the much poorer world of the Torah's time would never have. The second law states unequivocally and memorably that you must pay a worker on the day he completes his labor. In our society, delays of 2 weeks and more are common for payrolls, even for minimum wage employees who need the money most. Again, the Torah, created at least 2,500 years ago, insists on a higher standard of morality for employers than we do today. Labor has value. Honest work deserves immediate pay. It's a simple lesson, and one we still haven't quite learned. In an era in which employers demand wage concessions, which are actually pay cuts for the same or often more work, while steadily cutting benefits and jobs, in a period when management feels empowered to fire anyone at any time with neither notice nor severance, perhaps it's time to allow Ki Tse to teach us this central lesson once again. When we come back on Two Jewish, author Sarah Aronson will help us see the world through the eyes of a very normal, bright 12-year-old boy and make us care. All that when we come back on Two Jewish.
When you're looking to buy or sell your home, you probably want Tucson's best realtor on your side. That realtor is Jill Rich. As real estate values change, it's comforting to know that Jill Rich knows Tucson's real estate landscape. She follows the trends. She knows the neighborhoods. She even knows how to help you find financing. But most importantly, Jill cares. It doesn't matter if you're looking for a starter home or a castle. It's like having your bubby in the realty business. For sellers, Jill will develop a personal marketing program that'll sell your house fast. There's no one who knows Tucson real estate better. You can reach Jill Rich at Long Realty's River and Campbell office. Call 349-0174. Jill Rich, providing strong representation in a caring way. Call 349-0174.
We continue with our Two Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
Cold peace between Egypt and Israel, at least cold on the Egyptian side, has nonetheless lasted intact for nearly 35 years, but now it's in danger. In Egypt, the same kinds of Facebook groups that helped overthrow longtime dictator Hosni Mubarak are now mobilizing what they term a million-man rally against Israel. Borrowing from the Reverend Jesse Jackson's playbook, the movement was fueled by the Israeli response to the terror attacks in the Negev near Eilat a couple of weeks ago, in which 8 Israelis were brutally murdered. The IDF fired back, and 6 Egyptian security officers were killed along with the terrorists. Israel expressed regret to Egypt, but that seems not to be enough for either the Egyptian government or the popular protesters, who surrounded the Israeli embassy in Cairo, burning Israeli flags, throwing firecrackers, and generally making a ruckus. We can only hope that saner heads prevail, and that the peace treaty, which has been highly beneficial to both sides, remains intact for some time to come. Also in Israel, economic figures for the first half of 2011 show that there's been a 40% increase in Israeli exports to Turkey, reached nearly $1 billion in the first 6 months of this year. In spite of the political crisis in Israel-Turkey relations, fueled by the flotilla crisis last June, economic ties between the two most sane nations in the Middle East, not that there's much competition, continue to blossom. That makes any potential break in diplomatic relations highly undesirable. Wow, a 40% an increase in economic volume. That is indeed something to preserve and nurture. In other news, as an alumnus of the great basketball school UCLA, I must admit that I've never had much use for Duke University and its own highly accomplished basketball program. Duke is too preppy, too irritating, frankly, too snotty. But an event last week might just change my mind. You see, former Duke University basketball star John Shire arrived in Israel and immediately made Aliyah. Shire, who was signed in June to play with Israel's championship Maccabi Tel Aviv team, landed in Israel last week on a group Aliyah flight organized by Nefesh B'Nefesh in cooperation with the Jewish Agency and the Ministry of Immigrant Absorption, the Misrad HaKlita. I am really looking forward to starting my new life in Israel and playing for Maccabi Tel Aviv. Shire, a guard who during his senior year helped lead the Blue Devils to the 2010 NCAA championship, he was their top scorer, signed a 2-year contract with Maccabi, which was the runner runner-up to the EuroLeague champions this year and has won the EuroLeague championship four times. By Israeli rules, Maccabi is limited to no more than four foreign players. Since John Shire has made Aliyah, he won't count as one of the four. Get it? I wanted John already last season. I'm very happy we managed to sign him, Maccabi coach David Blatt told reporters at the signing, adding that Shire is a very talented and smart player and a true winner. Not less importantly, he is a Jew who is coming to Israel, Blatt said, and I wish he will stay here for many more years. And while he was making all those three-pointers and leading Duke to a narrow championship game win over Butler, I had no idea that Shire, who stands 6'5" and was Duke's top scorer, was Jewish, let alone an incipient Israeli. Mazel tov to John Shire, and mazel tov to Maccabi Tel Aviv. And that's the news of Jews around the world. We welcome back to Two Jewish our guest this morning, Sarah Aronson. She's the author of the new book, Beyond Lucky, her second book for young readers, 9 to 12-year-olds. And if you've got a boy or a girl, a great book to pick up for them. Her first book, Headcase, young adult novel, was named an ALA Quick Pick for Reluctant Readers. How does one get to be a Quick Pick for Reluctant Readers?
I don't know. You have to have, the stars are right. Somebody reads it, a librarian reads it, they think that the book will work for kids who aren't traditional readers. I was one of those kids, so I was really delighted to be on that list. And then people read it and they vote.
One of the really neat things in your book is each chapter is introduced with a quote from a president. As you said, he loves presidents, your character, Ari. How'd you pick those quotes? And then there's one quote I have to ask you about.
Okay. I picked the quotes based on the theme of the chapter and what was happening in the chapter. And I looked through, along with my son, Elliot, looked through lots and lots of quotes and was just amazed at how often presidents talk about the common man and honor the common man and have a good sense of humor about it sometimes, too. And so it was fun to get those quotes. It was a challenge to make sure that they were bipartisan.
Well, they definitely are bipartisan. My favorite quote out of all of them is from George H.W. Bush, that is George Bush the First. Leadership to me means duty, honor, country means character, and it means listening from time to time. Some of these are a little self-revelatory, aren't they?
Yes, they are.
A little revealing. Now, it doesn't seem like he has the irony that your main character, lead character, has the irony that you do, as you noted earlier in the interview, seem to find in teenage characters. But there is a bit of irony here, isn't there?
There is, and I think that Ari is growing into that a little bit, and also the things around him are causing him to look at his life with new eyes.
12 is an interesting age. Why did you decide to set it as a 12-year-old?
Well, I love 12. Having been a Jewish educator in a small Jewish community, it was the magic year where they just changed right in front of you, and they asked so many great questions. And, of course, I mean, when you start your studies for bar mitzvah, you're thinking about Jewish things all the time, or at least when you're in the office with the educator. And some kids asked such great questions that really helped me form some of the questions that Ari asks.
You know, when I teach bar mitzvah kids, they're assigned each week to come up with four questions about something Jewish. The four, of course, is just, you know, purely chance. Some of them have a great deal of trouble coming up with questions. Some of them are highly inquisitive. It's really interesting, the difference. 12 could be any age from 10 to 15 in some ways. How did you sort of pitch his character?
I think he began to develop over so many years. I mean, when I first started writing this book, he wasn't Jewish. It was really much more about soccer and heroes. And when I thought about heroes being everyday people and then everyday people being heroes, it didn't take me long to go back to my Jewish roots and to think about those studies and thinking about those Jewish characters from the point of view of that child getting ready to sort of be center stage and make a statement for the first time, to say, who am I? Here I am in front of a group of people who are their friends and family.
You have a rabbi character here who is very nicely portrayed. Rabbis in books and movies lately seem to come out as buffoons or something else. How did you just, isn't it sort of heretical to have a good rabbi who gives good advice?
Well, my grandfather was a rabbi, so I can't, you know.
Who was your grandfather?
Joe Klein. He was the rabbi in Worcester, Massachusetts, at Temple Emmanuel for many years.
Wonderful.
Did you feel better once it started becoming a Jewish story?
Yes. I felt more connected to Ari and his quest and his problems. And I found ways for him to deal with those problems that were true to him. I mean, I think he always wanted to be Jewish, and I was sort of trying to be more ecumenical for a while. And then it did really come together when I made that leap.
The card, the soccer card that becomes his talisman, his, I don't know, rabbit's foot, his good luck charm, gets lost and found and so on. Tell us a little bit about how you hit on that device.
Well, I mean, there's something, when you are an MFA student, you learn a lot of craft tips, and one of them is called the endowed object. And this was the perfect endowed object. And it came to me when my friend John was sitting at the dinner table with my husband and I and pulled out a Bill Buckner trading card, baseball card. And we live in New England, so everyone knows who Bill Buckner is. I grew up a Mets fan, so I smiled at this card. And John said, you know, everybody has a bad day once in a while, and that's why he's my hero. And the attachment to that card in that friend, in that moment, just stopped me and made me think a lot about how we attach ourselves to heroes and having a souvenir of a hero, being able to look at their face and connect to them in a really personal, private way.
Well, you know, I grew up watching Bill Buckner play for the Los Angeles Dodgers before he let that ground ball go through his legs, so... He was one of my heroes, too, so that's pretty good. I like that story very much.
You know, he had a lot of good days before he had that one bad day.
Well over 2,000 hits, won a batting title, but everybody remembers that one. You know, and that's part of the message of this book. If you were to say there's one sort of central message, what would you say it was? It's speaking didactically, of course.
Of course. I think that heroes are real people, and real people are heroes, and that... I guess that's it.
I want to thank Sarah Aronson for a great visit here on Too Jewish. Her book is called Beyond Lucky. It's a great book to get for a kid, boy or girl, up to 12 years old, and maybe even 13. Tell us, is there a website people can go to for more information?
Sure. You can go to my website. It's www.saraaronson.com.
That's A-R-O-N-S-O-N. Sarah, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
My pleasure. When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest and get a final musical play out.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reformed, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470. Taste of Judaism has everything you ever wanted to know about Judaism, but were afraid to ask. In three upbeat, fun, free, informative sessions, Taste of Judaism brings the joy of Jewish life and learning to you. You'll study with outstanding rabbis, including Too Jewish's Rabbi Sam Kohan. Learn what Jewish values, spirituality, and community are all about. And have a great sample of delicious Jewish foods. Classes are offered at various times at three Tucson locations, at Temple Emmanuel in central Tucson,
on the northwest side, and on the east side. All classes are open to everyone, Jewish or not. Best of all, Taste of Judaism is free. There's no charge, but you must pre-register by calling 327-4501. More than 3,500 students have taken Taste of Judaism. Why not join them? Call 327-4501 and ask for Mila to register for Taste of Judaism, the most popular and effective introduction to Jewish learning and life. Call 327-4501 for your own Taste of Judaism.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next Sunday at 9 a.m. Our guest will be John Rosenberg, CEO of the nonprofit organization Change the World. And of course, listen to all our podcasts on iTunes or our TooJewishRadio.com website. And please friend us on Facebook. Our playout this morning comes from the Don Reichel Project, his song Chalomot Shel Acherim, the beautiful haunting tune, Other People's Dreams. My friends, have a Shavua Tov, a good week, and a week we pray of peace and a day free of labor.
Shanim kulam bochim, shanim kulam chozrim, utfim achrei ha-shemesh, shvuim betoch ma'agalim, kulam mesubachim, bezmat od cholemet. Shanim em mastirim, shanim kulam yodim, even mitapechet.